So it was October 25th, 1964, and Jim Marshall was having a great day on the football field. His Minnesota Vikings were defeating the San Francisco 49ers. Marshall played defensive end for the Vikings, a position he had held from 1961 to 1979. He was the heart and soul of the Purple People Eaters, ranked by ESPN as one of the top five defensive ends of all time. He started 270 consecutive games, a record that stood for 30 years, and played in four Super Bowls. He recovered more opponents' fumbles than anyone in NFL history, and if the league had kept statistics for sacks where he played, Marshall would be among the leaders. To this day, he is known as the NFL's Iron Man. His jersey is on display at the Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. But unlike his two other defensive line teammates, Carl Elber and Alan Page, Marshall has never been voted into the Hall of Fame. Perhaps it has something to do with what happened during the game on that fateful day in October that you just saw. Marshall had already caused the 49ers quarterback George Myra to fumble. Eller had picked it up and run it for a touchdown, and now it was Marshall's turn. Myra dropped back to pass, evaded the Viking rush, and completed a pass to Billy Kilmer, who fumbled when he was hit. Marshall scooped up the ball and ran 66 yards into the end zone, the wrong one. Teammates ran after him, yelling for him to stop. His coaches were on the sidelines, frantically trying to wave him off, all to no avail. Marshall's first thought that something had gone wrong was when he was given a hug in the end zone by a 49er. Along with his other accomplishments, Marshall holds the record for the shortest play in NFL history, minus 66 yards. Most commentators believe that Marshall had a Hall of Fame career, and most believed that he's not in the Hall of Fame because of that one play that forever would be associated with him. In football, it's possible to take one wrong turn on the field and never make it into the Hall of Fame. Well, in the same way, in life, it's possible to take one wrong turn in the wilderness and never get to the promised land that God has waiting for us. Well, over the last few weeks, we've been journeying through the wilderness, so to speak, learning some life lessons from two of the great heroes of the Old Testament, Moses and Elijah, learning how to navigate the wilderness and come out on the other side, closer to God. Well, this morning, we're going to look at another aspect of the wilderness, avoiding wrong turns while we're in the wilderness. Avoiding wrong turns while we're in the wilderness. But before we get there, it's important for us to take a moment and to remind ourselves about the reality of the wilderness, both what it is and how we get there. Because whether you are in the wilderness now, you will be at some point in the wilderness. Every single one of us, at some point, multiple points in our lives, we will be in the wilderness, because Jesus said, in this life, you will have many troubles. You will have difficulties. So trials and temptations and difficulties, they're just a fact of life. We call it the wilderness. So the wilderness, let's remind ourselves of the definition of what exactly is the wilderness. It's a time or a season when we are overwhelmed, when it's just really tough, when we are tested, when we are tempted. It's a season when our burdens are heavy and our spirits are just dry. And we wonder how in the world we're going to make it. I know some of you are there today. I know some of you have just come out of your wilderness. And the reality is, some of you are getting ready to go into the wilderness. But what we've been working on in this message series is helping us to learn that it is also a time or a season of enormous opportunities. That the wilderness doesn't have to knock us down and keep us down. But the wilderness, those difficult seasons and times of life, they can be opportunities for us to learn to trust God in a deeper way. They can be opportunities, as we have talked over the last few weeks, to grow closer to God than we've ever been before. And it's also an opportunity for us to be transformed into the very image of God. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about what gets us in the wilderness. Why do we have these days and times and seasons where we feel overwhelmed, tempted, tested, our souls are dry, it's hard to look to the future where the right now, today, is about all that we can take? And we've talked about the fact that often the wilderness happens because of our choices or our actions. We choose to walk into the wilderness by our choices and our actions, or our choices maybe to disobey God, or our choices to not make worship a priority, our choices to separate ourselves from God and from his people. Sometimes it's just because of dumb things that we do that just make us end up in the wilderness. Sometimes we're in the wilderness because of the actions and the choices of other people. We end up there because others made a bad choice and we get sucked into the wilderness. We end up in the wilderness because other people do things or say things that pull us in with them. Sometimes we end up in the wilderness because of just what we'd refer to as the natural flow of life. You know, seasons of life as our kids get older, teenage years, I am banking on the fact that that's going to be a season of wilderness. Sometimes as our parents grow older, it can be a season of wilderness. It can be with job changes. It can be a time when illness or difficulty, you know, just the basic ebb and flow of life, we can end up in the wilderness. And sometimes we end up in the wilderness because it's God's plan. Now, I don't think that's the dominant way, because I think we do a good enough job on our own of ending up in the wilderness. But sometimes we end up in the wilderness because there's something really specific that God wants us to learn. Maybe about him. Maybe about his power or his provision. Maybe the fact that he can be trusted. So sometimes we enter into the wilderness because God's just got a plan for us to do that. Well, today we're going to talk about the caution. The caution that I'm referring to, the warning, the reality that I want to share with you this morning is that we can extend our time in the wilderness by wrong turns. We have the capacity, because we are free people, we have the capacity to extend our time in the wilderness because we make the wrong turn, because we make the wrong choice, because we decide to disengage, because we don't keep our eyes on Jesus. We can end up in the wilderness way longer than we need to be there. And so this morning, I want to kind of unpack three different wrong turns that we learned from the Israelites, that they learned in the wilderness. Now, let's remind ourselves of the story. Because of their disobedience, the Israelites, the Hebrew people, have become slaves in Egypt. They are under the Pharaoh's regime. And so they are no longer the free people that God created them to be. They have disobeyed God, and because of that, they're now slaves. And they're slaves for a really long time. Well, ultimately, God calls a guy, Moses, to lead God's people out of captivity, out of slavery, and into the promised land. It is a glorious promise. It is a spectacular opportunity where God's people get to leave captivity, leave slavery, and walk into this place that's referred to as a place that's flowing with milk and honey. God's promised land for them. All they have to do is follow Moses. All they have to do is what Moses tells them to do, because Moses is acting as God's mediator. So Moses is the one who's listening to God and telling the people what to do. And so in a spectacular display of God's power, Moses takes on the Pharaoh. You remember the story, right? We have all these plagues where Moses is saying, all right, Pharaoh, let my people go, or it's not going to go well for you. And he just persists, and the longer Pharaoh persists, the harder his heart becomes, until ultimately Pharaoh's like, go. get out. But you know, they no sooner get out than Pharaoh's going to come chasing after them. So they no sooner leave slavery and captivity till we begin to see that the Israelites make their first wrong turn. That the Israelites make their first wrong turn as they have entered into the wilderness. Because to get to the promised land, they got to go through the wilderness. They got to leave the so-called comfort of Egypt to go into this promised land. And so they are journeying into the wilderness. They no sooner get into the wilderness. I mean, we're talking days. This is not like a super long road trip. This is just days when they begin to grumble. And they turn their mouths against God, grumbling and complaining. Like ad nauseam, grumbling and complaining. Almost immediately upon leaving as slaves, they start complaining. In Exodus 16:8, we see that in the midst of the wilderness, God is showing his power, showing his ability to provide for them. And they're complaining about food, and it says that the Lord will give you meat to eat in the evening and bread to satisfy you in the morning, for he has heard all your complaints against him. What have we done? Yes, your complaints are against the Lord, not against us. See, what Moses realized really early was that the Israelites weren't really complaining against him. Yes, they said things like, Moses, why'd you bring us out here? Moses, did you just bring us out here to, like, let us die? Moses, we don't have enough food to eat. We don't have enough water to drink. Moses, can we go back to Egypt? See, we always think it's better in the past. We even have expressions like in the good old days, when the truth is, when we really think about the good old days, they probably aren't that good. We just have this amazing capacity to forget about the bad stuff and remember the good stuff and think that the days in old were better than the days of today. So they begin complaining and grumbling over and over and over to Moses. That they can't believe that they have come out of here. And Moses knows that they're not against him. They're ultimately complaining against God. Now, there's nothing wrong with us crying out to God. There is nothing wrong with saying, God, why? There is nothing wrong with just falling on our faces before God and just crying out to God and praying to God. We see that all throughout Scripture, but what the Israelites were doing and what we often do is start complaining and griping against God. When truth be told, most of the time we're in the wilderness, and I would say most of the time we're in the wilderness, it's because of our choices. It's because of our actions. And then we're like, God, why? When the truth be told is, why not? Right? So I've been reading this book. Rob Renfro, he's a pastor friend of mine down in Texas, and he wrote this amazing book about the wilderness, and I've been referring to it throughout this message series because Rob just has some profound things to say to us, and he writes this in his book, that when we get into the place of self-pity, where we are complaining and grumbling, very often what's beneath our words is anger with God for allowing us to go through the very trials we need in order to become more like Jesus. That so often we cry out and we complain with God when the reality is that it's in the difficult seasons of life where we are most transformed, where we are most changed, where we discover our total need for God. But Moses' caution to his people and what we see throughout their journey is that we have to be super careful that what we say to God with our mouths doesn't end up being complaining and grumbling against God, but really seeking after God. We have to be careful that our words, that we bring our needs and our questions to God, not set our lives against God. Because sometimes in the wilderness, we can be so bitter. We can complain so much. We can grumble so much that the problem is we attract a lot of people like us. And that can keep us in the wilderness longer than it needs to. Or we can stay stuck in our stuff and we never get out. That we, you know, when we complain, isn't it amazing how when we complain, we find a lot of people who complain? Like there's just something about, we have this like magnet to us when we become complainers and grumblers. Isn't it amazing how many negative people we attract? But we have to be so careful when things are not going the way we want them to, when we're in the wilderness, when we're in the difficulty, where we're not just crying out and complaining and grumbling against God. Because we have read throughout this series promises like God says, I will always be with you. I am with you till the end of the age. See, God doesn't leave us. We leave him by setting our lives against him, by separating ourselves from him. And what the Israelites did was that first they complained that there wasn't any food, and so God gives them manna, like this stuff that do you know what the word manna means? What is it? So we don't even know what it is. That's what the word manna means. I can imagine, what is it? Yes! What is it? Yes! But it was there to show God's grace, to show God's provision. God's like, I'm going to provide for you. Well, they no longer started eating the manna. Then they got tired of it. And they complained some more, like, can we have something other than manna? Yes. So say, then God gives them quail, like ad nauseum quail. And then they get to the point where, like, can we have anything else but that? Isn't it amazing how we're never satisfied? And so they complained and argued and grumbled. I think that's the first turn, the first wrong turn that they made. And I think, it's one of the first wrong turns we make. That we often say, God, why did you do this? When the reality is, so often, it's not, God, why did you do this? But we should look in the mirror and say, why did I do this? Why did I separate myself from God? Why did I make that decision? Why did I make that action? Why did I do that? So we got to be really careful that we bring our words, our petitions, our prayers, our needs before God, not set ourselves against him. So the first wrong turn that the Israelites made was that they turned their mouths against God. I think a second wrong turn that we see in the life of the Israelites as Moses is trying to lead this ragtag group of men and women and children into this promised land is that they turned their ears to the wrong people for advice. You ever do that? They listened to the wrong people. Now, I discovered when I was researching this little word. Honestly, I can't tell you how many times I've read the story, how many times I've dug into the life of the Israelites as they journeyed to the promised land and have had all these amazing lessons. But I found this, listen to this, in Exodus 12:38. It says, a rabble of non-Israelites went with them, along with greater flocks and herds of livestock. Did you ever remember reading that? That a rabble went with them. And so the question that is begging to be answered is, what is rabble? We're told in Numbers 11:4, then the foreign rabble who were traveling with the Israelites began to crave the good things of Egypt, and the people of Israel also began to complain. Oh, for some meat, they exclaimed. See, the rabble are the voices that we listen to. If you've been around here for any length of time, you know one of my favorite sayings is when the voice of God speaks, there's always another voice. There's always a dissenting voice. There's always another voice that's going to be against the things of God. When we're going through a difficult season, isn't it amazing how many people want to help us? When the truth is, we got to be very discerning who we listen to. Because we don't want to listen to victims, we want to listen to victors, right? We want to listen to people who are spiritually mature. We don't want to listen to people who are far from God. We want to listen to people who will help us be drawn into the presence of God, who will help point us towards God's word, who will draw us into God's community. We have to be very discerning who we listen to in the midst of our wilderness experiences. Because if we listen to the wrong voices, we're going to stay in the wilderness way longer than what we need to. Oh, it's so tough. Oh, you just need to do, or why don't you just, and we could just fill these blanks in with all kinds of things that just keep us in the wilderness, right? When I was talking to somebody earlier, when we were talking about this idea that really what we need is somebody to speak the truth to us. Speak the truth in love. Sometimes when we're in the wilderness, we need somebody to say, buck up. Sometimes when we're in the wilderness, we need somebody to come alongside us and to put their arm around our shoulder, but as they do that, to start walking with us so that we get to move towards healing and wholeness and wellness. Sometimes when we're in the wilderness, the voice that we really need to hear is people saying, so, like, what are you doing to get out of that wilderness? What are you doing to draw closer to God? What are you doing to become healthier and more whole? That we need people to speak the truth in love to us because they care about us. And so what we really need are spiritually mature people to speak truth to us. And the truth be told is we're not going to find the spiritual mature people usually out there. We find them in our family, in our church. And we need to seek out the people who will help draw us into the presence of God, who will help us to grow stronger and deeper in our relationship with God. Because here, Rob Renfro says this, that when we're in the wilderness, the rabble will come. That when we're going through the difficult seasons of life, the rabble's going to come. For the Israelites, it was the non-God-fearers. It was the people who were living in oppression and captivity, just like the Israelites were. But they saw a good thing. They saw Moses come before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's like, get out. And they're like, we're going to. And with somewhere between 1 million and 2 million people who leave Egypt, they like get themselves in the middle of the crowd because they're not checking passports on the way out. And the lesson for us is don't listen to the rabble. Don't listen to the people who will push us away from God. Listen to the people who will draw us closer to God. Don't listen to the people who are just complaining and grumbling. Listen to the people who help move us toward wholeness and healing and health. We've got to be very discerning who we listen to. There were so many times that even the leaders came up to Moses and they're like, Moses, we think we need to go back. He's like, no, we're not going back. We're going to keep our eyes. We're not going back. I'm not listening to that. Again, we want to listen to victors, not victims, so that we might be drawn closer to God, so that we might become all that God created us to be. So the Israelites had at least 3 wrong turns. First, they began to grumble and complain against God, so they used their mouths. Then they turned, their ears to the wrong people. But then they did something else. I think this is a really big one too. Is that they turned their eyes away from God. They turned their eyes away from God. Renfro said this in his book, more than anything else, what kept the Israelites out of the promised land was their habit of continually focusing on their problems rather than looking for God. As I was just going over that this morning, there was this image that came into my head. You've probably seen these big blunders on whether it's YouTube or some other feed. There are even places that are passing like restrictions and rules about this, about people texting and walking. Right? We've all heard the expression, like, you don't text and drive, right? Because that's not a good thing. You wreck your car, kill people. But if you want to see something really funny, like do a little search for texting and walking to see the number of people who literally walk into fountains, who like run into signs, who like trip over things. Do you know why that happens? Because they're not looking ahead. Oh, I think about a couple years ago, we went to the beach and I had one of those ultimate fearful moments. I was walking with our oldest daughter. We're just walking on the beach, and I was looking this way. Her eyes got caught over here by somebody fishing, and so where did she go? And I wasn't watching, and I got down the beach. Not super far, but just enough that I'm like, "Kit," and the beach was packed. And I started to freak. I am screaming her name. I am like Where are you? People started standing up. They're like, what's going on? I'm like, I've lost my daughter. She has this on, this on. She was literally right here. And like people are looking and looking, and I start going back and screaming at the top of my lungs. And all of a sudden, like some dude had been catching fish, and she was down there like just seeing the fish that these people caught. Well, that happens when we don't keep our eyes on what we should be keeping our eyes on. Is that we can not only be led astray, but we can end up being stuck someplace because our eyes are looking at something. When we went walking on that beach, I'm like, honey, just keep your eyes on me. Just keep your eyes on, you just need, and we do this when we go in the store, right? Do you tell your kids that? I got to see you. And I'm like, I got to see you, and you got to see me. Because what happens is when we take our eyes off what's really important, we end up in the wilderness. And the people, the Israelites, did that. So they've been in the wilderness for not very long. They get to the edge of the promised land. And Moses says, all right, we're going to check it out. He calls together 10 guys, 10 guys who represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And he's like, okay, it is time to go check out. We are like right here. And God's getting ready to take us right there. So you guys go check it out and you come back and give us a report. Because we are about ready to enter into the promised land. So 12 guys, they go. And it's amazing. I mean, they describe these clusters of grapes that are so big, they got to put them on a stick. They describe, it's a place just flowing with milk and honey. Like, it is so good. They come back and they're like, they come back with this report, and most like, so what do you think? And there was a minority report and there was a majority report. The majority report was 10 out of the 12, we can't do it. We can't do it. As a matter of fact, in Numbers 13, 28, and then 31 through 33, the minority report says, the people living there are powerful. And their towns are huge and fortified. There, we even saw giants there. The descendants of Anak. We can't go against them. Now, you would think somebody would say, okay, like, remember that like whole Red Sea thing? Where Moses touched his staff and like the oceans parted and we walked on dry ground. Do you remember the manna thing and the quail? Do you realize everything, like the 10 things that God just did through Moses? Do you remember? They're stronger than we are. All the people we saw were huge. We even saw giants there. The descendants of Anak, next to them, we felt like grasshoppers. And that's what they thought too. In other words, we can't do it because they took their eyes off of God. This God who had led them towards the promised land, this God who provided everything for them, got them to the edge of the promised land. Let's get ready to say, okay, go. Like, they just took their eyes off God. How often do we take our eyes off God? And look what happens when we continue this story. It says that the whole, well, we look at chapter 14. I would encourage you to go to Numbers 14 and read it sometime today. But it says, then the whole community began weeping aloud and they cried all night. Why is the Lord taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Let's choose a new leader and go back to Egypt. They're there. They're ready. Like, God has prepared them. God is going to lead them in. They're like, we can't do it. People are too big. It's just, and they complain and gripe and cry out and all that kind of stuff. And so then what happens? Then the Lord said, not one of these people will ever enter the land. They have all seen my glorious presence and the miraculous signs I performed both in Egypt and in the wilderness. But again and again and again and again, I added a couple, they have tested me by refusing to listen to my voice. They will never even see the land I swore to give to them. Tomorrow, you must set out for the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea. The only two who left Egypt, who got to go into the promised land, were Caleb and Joshua. Because they believed that God was going to do it. They just, because they kept their eyes on the Lord, that God was going to deliver, that they were going to get this. But nobody else got to go because they took their eyes off the Lord. How often do we do? How often do we take our eyes off of God because we're like the texters of life in the wilderness? We're walking like this because we're trying to figure things out like this, and what we need is somebody in our life that says, "Look up, look up." But we've taken our eyes off of God, and what we do is we have spent too much time looking at our problems instead of God's promises. And so the takeaway is that we have to choose. We choose to focus on God's promises and on his power more than our problems. And that is a choice. Because sometimes our problems are just so huge. But we have to make the choice. Am I gonna focus on my problems and the difficulties and the wilderness, or am I gonna look up? Am I gonna look up to see that my Lord is still on the throne? Am I gonna look out to see that God has provided me with a family called the church? Am I gonna look out and see his word to see where God's promises have been fulfilled? Am I gonna look up and look out to see that I can trust God? See, we've got to look at God's promises and his possibilities and his provision and his power way more than we look at our problems. See, because the idea here is more important than what happens to you in the wilderness is what happens in you. More than what happens to you in the wilderness, it what happens in you. That if we keep our eyes on the Lord, if we listen for God's word, if we surround ourselves with God's people, if we immerse ourselves in God's word and remind ourselves over and over and over again as his promises. You know, how many people, because we don't read about any of them, how many people in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, how many of those 1 to 2 million people were going, "Hey, look up. Trust God. He did this." If we can trust him for that, do you think we can trust him for this? If he brought us to this land and he's like, "Go check it out. We're getting ready to go in." Do you think we could trust God to say, "Take a foot and get in the promised land"? It doesn't tell us. Because I think God's calling us to be that voice. God's calling us to be that voice to the people in our lives. To say, "Look up." Like, attune your ears to the voice of God, not the rabble. Let the words coming out of your mouth, even in the difficulty, offer praises. Because I can tell you that in the wilderness, sometimes the best I got is to just sing praises to God. That's what the psalmist did over and over and over. The psalmist teaches us how to pray, because you can read some of those psalms and they're like crying out to God, and like it's a mess and really difficult. But at the end of every psalm, is the psalmist says, "But I will trust you and I will love you, O God, because I will keep my eyes on you." And we're in the wilderness. We have the ability many times to shorten our stay in the wilderness by allowing our mouths to be mouths of praise, by attuning our ears to listen for the voice of God, speaking to us directly, speaking to us through his people, speaking to us through his word, and to filter out the rabble, and to keep our eyes on this God who can do exceedingly abundantly, as the Apostle Paul says, exceedingly abundantly more than we could ever possibly imagine. So in the wilderness, we need somebody to go, "Remember, remember, remember, and take heart." Because Jesus said, "I have overcome the world." Take heart.